Welcome, everybody, to episode 267 of the Metabolers 2 podcast featuring David
and Ben. And what are we talking about this fine podcast episode?
Well, apart from celebrating something that someone told me quite recently, we now have more new series Doctor Who stories than we have of the classic series.
Oh, we've crossed over into modernity, I guess.
Or... Exactly, into a weird zone where we don't know what's happening. So very appropriately, we're talking about the most recent Doctor Who episode that's called The Story and the Engine, that is about stories, and I guess also engines.
And we do have some callback footage, very briefly, of prior Doctors, and a cameo by Dr. Ruth herself.
The fugitive Dr. Ruth. To be honest, one of my top five Doctors of all time, Joe Martin, is back very, yeah. very quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just going to say this now, like, why they can't just let Joe Martin be the Doctor for like an entire series or something, I completely makes me angry, to be honest. Like, she's so good, and you've heard me say this before, I think she's been mm-hmm. so wasted. I'm sure she's happy with it.
She's gotten wasted.
But to have her just kind of like a sort of like, whoa, yeah. power, then she's gone again.
A missed opportunity with the Tennant specials, yes. that they could have had three Joe Martin specials.
Absolutely. Why not? Yeah. To have her just kind of sort of be there and for like 30 seconds and then not be there anymore, like just have it be the two Doctors for a bit, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. It's disappointing that she's kind of put aside. Because yeah. Chibnall did come up with something very interesting with the division. If BBC is going to go with the whole Infinite Doctors and there's
right.
prior regenerations before Hartnell, it would right. be nice, you know, instead of the land or the battle between the war and the land or the sea or sea and the land or whatever it is coming up, you could have the division.
The division, and we could have Joe Martin Doctor team up with the older McGann Doctor or something. I don't know. Mm. but I mean, she's such a strong performer mm-hmm. and just owned the role in the one episode that she's had, really.
Really?
I'm always upset when she kind of pops up and like, hello, remember me? And then has to go away again because she's not the current Doctor. No, she is the current Doctor. She's the fugitive Doctor. There's lots of stories. I mean, I guess she's doing Big Finish now, which is kind of a consolation prize.
I guess.
Of some kind. Which I hope she's, obviously she's being paid for. Anyway, so she's in it for a bit.
Blink and you miss her, though.
Blink and you miss her. Exactly. And then, of course, everyone, including myself, was absolutely delighted to see the return of Poppy from Space Babies. Oh.
As the creepy child.
And again, as an uncredited cameo of some kind. Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. I mean, maybe there'll be a payoff at some point.
It seemed like there's a lot of seeding things that might come to fruition in the season finale.
Yes, I am definitely inclined to agree with you. I really think if we just want to go big in the first 5 minutes of the podcast, I really think we're heading for some kind of this is all a story payoff, 100%.
I think that ties in with themes that you've been picking up all series long, that this is a very meta arc that we are experiencing with Mrs. Flood and stories.
Yeah, my sort of personal theory that Mrs. Flood is the god of stories or something is not the case, because actually we had a whole bunch of gods of stories in this mm-hmm. episode. So, mm-hmm. and they, I don't know, they're obviously not going to be featured, or maybe they are. It's not going to be a traditional land of, Troughton-style land of fiction. Mm. But yeah, there will be some kind of meta payoff, which is going to be tricky, and I hope they can pull it off.
So let's jump in on the gods thing.
Right.
I felt it was kind of sloppy to have those gods if RTD is trying to establish a new pantheon of gods with Sutek and Lux and the Toymaker, and then name check real gods like Anansi, Loki, Dionysus. It seemed to be really muddling the theme that RTD is trying to bring about.
Oh, 100%. I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, plus, you know, as far as kids are concerned, Loki is a character in Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Not a god at all of any kind, but, you know, like the evil superhero. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to formulate what I mean by this, but it seems to me that when a writer of this stature, and, you know, I don't think we've had a writer of this importance. If you've got an MBE, for God's sake.
We're talking about Anula Elams, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, we haven't had a writer of this exterior stature since, you know, we had Neil Gaiman and, you know, what's his name, who did the 2012 Olympics. And it seems to me that when we invite a writer like that to come into Doctor Who, it seems to me to be quite hard for our showrunner to control what they write. And it seemed to me here that there was if I'd been RTD, I'd be like, look, listen, yeah, great, we love Anansi the Spider, you know, we love Dionysus, we love all that stuff, but that doesn't actually fit with what we're trying to do here. Can you not do that? He's not said that to her, basically.
To him.
Yes. You know, he's not script editing this, because the writer is of such a stature that you can't really script edit what they write. That's my opinion.
And honestly, I prefer Elam's story over anything that RTD's been trying to do with the Pantheon. I think it works a lot better. And my initial takeaway of this is I really like the story a lot. I thought this is one of the better stories, and building on the themes on Lux, which I really liked. I thought this was a nice, on similar lines of kind of a land of fiction type story. And I thought it was pretty rich in ideas, and I thought the cast was excellent, and really the two knockdowns that I have is it was Belinda Light. I would like to have seen Belinda more incorporated into the story itself, and that it doesn't really fit within the series arc. This seemed more of a standalone story than anything that would have fit within basically Davis's return to Doctor Who.
I agree. I think this could have been any, I mean, obviously it could have been any Doctor, because it is, you know,
explicitly written for
yeah, a Doctor who has very close African origins, if we can conflate the actor with the character for a second. Mm-hmm. So it couldn't be for any Doctor, but I mean, it could have been for any Doctor. I absolutely agree with you. I don't think it fits well with the arc at all. And I thought it was a great story, and I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff going on. I sort of didn't really feel that it fitted that well with Doctor Who per se, to be honest. I was very disappointed is the wrong word. I was kind of disappointed in the kind of the last, you know, in the kind of the last 10 minutes where we, you know, everyone's running around trying to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. And I should have written it down, but I didn't. I think someone is exhorted to start pulling out wires.
The doctor tells Belinda to start yanking out wires.
And then there's an implication that there's going to be a feedback of too much story energy is going to blow the circuits of the spider, which he may as well have just said, well, I'm just going to reverse the polarity of the neutron flow. I mean, it was kind of a Doctor Who-ifying moment,
yes,
which the story didn't really need to be Doctor Who-ified, other than the fact it has to be Doctor Who-ified because it's Doctor Who. And that kind of really took me out of the kind of fantasy element of this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what we do here is we just rip out wires and overload the feedback modulators. You know, that's Doctor Who stuff. That's not what we've been seeing the past half hour. That was my sort of feeling, really.
Yeah, it was kind of a difficult amalgamation between the science fiction and the science fantasy.
Right.
Or not even science fantasy, the fantasy elements of it. And I thoroughly enjoyed the fantasy elements of it. I really liked Ariane Baccaré's portrayal of the barber.
Right.
I just thought it was fantastic. I just thought that the whole cast was fantastic.
The barber, that was a standout performance. I thought that was very, very strong.
And very nuanced at the very, you know, when he thought he was in control, when he was angry about being used by the gods, and then kind of the breakdown. And I like that there was a redemption at the end, and forgiveness and understanding. And I like that there wasn't really any true villain in this. It's just somebody with a grudge and hell-bent on revenge, but then the message is hurt people hurt others.
Right,
and so
it's
the message of healing. And then even with Abby crediting Belinda, fancy a mortal teaching something to a god. So I liked all that bit. It's just I'm not really sure that we needed the big spider,
right?
Cyborg spider, but I guess it, you know, it works. As a whole, I find this a very, very watchable piece of television. But as a piece in the RTD Hooniverse since Tenants by Regeneration with Gatwa, it doesn't seem to fit
the
story that RTD's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is what I mean when I was kind of invoking Neil Gaiman and Frank Cottrell-Boyce, is that you know, that both Cottrell-Boyce and Gaiman are both fantasy writers. They're not science fiction writers. And both Gaiman's episodes had to be hacked around by, one reads, by Moffat to kind of make them science fiction. Mm-hmm. And Frank Cottrell-Boyce's episodes were just like, this isn't science fiction at all. This is fantasy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think similarly here, we have a fantasy writer who is
renowned,
name-checking a lot of really strong African fantasy themes. And then at various points in the narrative, we have to Doctor Whoify it by 50%. Which I think sometimes worked pretty well. I liked having the Doctors pop up on screen. That was exciting. We've already said how excited I was to see Joe Martin pop up as well. Mm-hmm. But then when we got to the end and we were, you know, pulling out wires and stuff, that, you know, when we have something as poetic as the heart within the brain, you know, et cetera, the kind of hand in the heart mm-hmm. metaphor, I felt just it kind of pulled me out of the fantasy in a way that I wasn't fully happy with.
It's kind of like how the thought you have to have a monster in modern Doctor Who, you can't just have like a pure historical. It's
right.
Like you couldn't have a pure fantasy story. You still need some kind of merchandisable monster to sell the story. And I wonder if the first draft of Elam's work had that big spider in, because it seems like it could have worked where it's all about the redemption of bringing back the barber from the state of revenge and how it's hurting people around him without having the green light, red light, the beast is hungry bit, which seemed more like the beast below than anything else.
It did seem very beast below. Yeah, it was really reminding me of that. The other thing I think that was coming to my head is that the barber, again, I was kind of comparing this to The Land of Fiction, mm-hmm. you know, where you have an amazing, very rewarding kind of fantasy narrative with the Doctor and his companions. And here again, we have the barber is the master of some kind of fictional world. You know, is the originator of all stories. Mm-hmm. And whereas in that Troughton's series, at the very end, we have to have a Doctor Who payoff, and it's all a computer, and he's planning to invade Earth.
Right.
You know, which is like, is he? I mean, do we have to have all that? Which we kind of don't, but we kind of do, because that's the way that 60s Doctor Who worked. Here, this is the way that 2020s Doctor Who works, mm-hmm. is we've got to bring it back to Doctor Who, when actually it could have just spun off into, particularly, I think, in some ways, if we are leading towards some kind of meta explanation at the end of all this, which we are, Mrs. Flood turning up in that hospital is kind of proof positive, and Poppy, that all this is a story. Mm-hmm. I don't know, the kind of Doctor Whoifying of it, which is a phrase I'm going to continue to use, whether you like it or not. Didn't really work for me.
Just to spring off the Mrs. Flood cameo, this seems like an earlier Mrs. Flood. It seems like this story was out of place for the growing sinisterness of the Flood character.
Right.
This seemed like the earlier Flood.
Exactly.
So this seems like it should have been right after Lux, almost.
Well, it almost seems like they were trying... I mean, how do we fit?
Yeah.
So this is, very, very self-consciously, and I think in a good way, a story that really only features Afro-Caribbean, African actors and writers, and I think possibly director as well. We have to have Mrs. Flood in everything.
And plus Virata,
which I guess, you know, she's a person of color. But how do we shoe in Anita Dobson? Because we have to have her in every episode. Well, let's have her running through the hospital. I was actually sort of a little bit disappointed that maybe a more imaginative way to include Anita Dobson, if that's something that we really have to do. She should have been the old woman that Belinda saved in the hospital. Or maybe that would have made, you know, the characters too close.
One way you could have done it is kind of like how Malcolm, I think it was Malcolm, in Indiana Jones, the Denhalt.
Denham Elliott.
Yeah, Denham Elliott, when Indiana is saying he's a master of disguise, he speaks many languages, he'll blend in, and you see him in the market asking for directions or something. you'd have
Mrs. Flood lost in Lagos.
Yeah, Anita Dobson with a map saying, hello, can you help me?
I'm trying to find whatever tourists do. I'm not sure Lagos is a huge tourist destination, but yeah, that would have been perfect.
I'm looking for Philip Morris and some lost. Well, can you point me to Yost?
This is something I said to my lovely wife after we'd finished watching the show. Is like, you know, what they could have done is they could have had everyone then go up to northern Nigeria looking for missing episodes.
If you were sitting on a trove of Doctor Who missing episodes, that's where you'd... I mean, and this is about stories. That's where you would make that big reveal and sort of like, whoa. Yeah.
Here are the missing... And then the actual missing episodes. And then, I don't know, the Doctor and Belinda would then sit down and watch them on some, you know...
Tales of the TARDIS.
Exactly. On a big screen that he pulls down from the ceiling of the new TARDIS. Going back to the hospital thing, there was something else that actually... I found interesting about the scripting here, where the doctor sits down. I'd be interested to see what your comment on this is, but where the doctor sits down in the barber's chair, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, I'm trapped in the chair. He has to tell a story. And he says, well, you're expecting I'm going to tell you. I didn't write it down, but I'm just paraphrasing.
Weeping
angels and ice warriors.
Yeah.
No, the most interesting stories are the ones of where people are in a hospital. I can't remember what the phraseology is.
You want a story about weeping angels and ice warriors, but nothing is more vivid than an ordinary life. One person, Belinda, on any given day, nurses are knackered, and after a 13-hour shift, she's done, and then he goes into the story.
Right. You know, I'm watching Doctor Who. I want to hear a story about ice warriors and weeping angels. If I wanted a story about a nurse... I would be watching ER or The Pit or Casualty or any other drama series of which there are a shit ton, pardon my French, on the television. I'm watching Doctor Who. So actually, I do want to hear a story about Weeping Angel, and I do want to hear a story about an Ice Warrior. Probably Ice Warriors more than Weeping Angels. So the Doctor's kind of got it wrong there when it comes to me, is that I know Belinda is a very, very talented and committed a nurse within the National Health Service, but I'm watching this show because I don't want to hear about the National Health Service. I'm watching this show because I want to hear about aliens and monsters.
If this was made during the classic series and say it was a 3 or 4 part one, the doctor would start with stories about Daleks, Cybermen, Santarans, you know, the Crinoid, whatever, and then it would be building up to the story about his companion and how her life is remarkable and how she is a good person and how vivid the ordinary life is. And as the beast or the more and more energy is needed, or he's running out of stories to tell. And then he realizes that it's not just the adventures and the peril from these aliens.
Perfect.
It's the real story is the story of Belinda, but there's no time to breathe in these 47 minute stories.
No, there isn't.
That you can't build up to that. But yeah, I agree with you. I was disappointed that we didn't see any
cool stories
or just some missing or lost stories, not lost in the video sense where the tapes have been wiped, but just stories that were name checked or referenced, or adventures the doctor had versus the Cybermen or something that couldn't be, oh, well, what is this one? Or things that would go back to the division, or some richer bit of the Doctor's storytelling, because where I think it was missing with that connection is because then later when he's trying to reverse the polarity of the neutron flow effectively, we don't really have a sense of those stories. And yeah, as fans watching, we do. I mean, there's a whole back catalog on Blu-ray, DVD, and streaming, but I think narratively in the story, if it had more time, I agree with you. It would have been appropriate to build up to, with the Doctor's own past, then leading into him being exhausted and then telling the story of Belinda.
Yeah, which I think that would have worked brilliantly. And I think you're right. If this had been a two-parter or, you know, even slightly longer, that could have worked. It seems to me, it really made me think of my disappointment with the ending of Ruby Sunday's story, where we discover that, you know, this whole kind of mystery about Ruby Sunday, et cetera, that had been built up to, with like, oh, TARDIS can see something strange in her body and blah, what's going on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the mystery just ends up being, well, she's adopted and, like, here's her mum. And that's kind of like, and this is the most important story of this person's life, is that they have discovered their birth mother. Which, you know, no doubt for a real person living in the real world, if you're adopted, discovering your birth mother is probably quite a big deal. I don't know that myself, but I would assume it must be. But this is a Doctor Who character. She's just literally fought the god of death.
Right.
So finding your birth mother, that's probably pretty cool and interesting. But as watchers, as we are, you know, the three fans sitting in the room watching the television, that is not the most important story about Ruby Sunday. That is not the most exciting thing. Just the thing about Belinda, the most exciting thing about Belinda and the Doctor is that they travel in time and fight aliens, not that she works as a nurse for the NHS.
Right.
And I think in some ways this may be leading us to what I am going to still say I think is going to be some kind of payoff at the end, whereas all of the stuff that the Doctor does is a story and is therefore not that important. The most important thing is people's everyday life. And I think that's something that RTD has been building to or has been working through in the years that he's not been writing Doctor Who. I think, you know, it was interesting to me the fact that he included a fictional episode of Doctor Who in It's a Sin. Again, I think making the contrast in that, okay, this is fantasy and also a bit silly and stupid, and then this is real life.
Right.
You're HIV positive and you're going to die of AIDS.
Right.
Which is the actual drama. And I would say right now, I'm thinking that the payoff at the end of this is that the things that you watch Doctor Who for, the excitement of fighting aliens, is actually not the important thing. The important thing are people's, the richness of everyday people's lives. Which is very, very, it's a very worthy sentiment, and I'm not going to disagree with it, but I'm not entirely sure that's what I watch this show for.
It does seem like, in some ways, RTD is setting this up with that theme for a hiatus.
Yeah, I think he is, yeah.
It's sort of like, well, these are just stories, it's more, real life is more important, get on with it.
I mean, it's, you know, it's almost, it's not, but it's, you know, it was reminding me of, you know, the famous William Shatner telling Star Trek fans to kind of
get a life,
snap out of it and get a life.
Yeah.
Stop watching this stupid show and go out and become a nurse, for God's sake. Which is entirely laudable, but also
not what they're there
for. I
don't
know. Not really what we're here for.
Right.
Really what we're here for.
We're here for circuses. We're here for bread and circuses.
We want bread. We want circuses. You know, we want to be, you know, our daily lives are horrible.
Entertain us. Here we are. Entertain us.
Exactly. Exactly. We're stupid and contagious. bring on some monsters. The more stompy and ridiculous, the better.
I mean, so I agree. Anyway, I love the writing. I mean, just when... They're leading up to that moment where the Doctor is about to sit in the barber chair. And, like, I think it was Rashid who says, yeah, we know who you are. You're like this intergalactic busybody, you know, last of his kind, so on and so on, blah, blah, blah. Just get on with it. We know you have a lot of stories. I like that kind of... It's knowing who the Doctor is without kind of the cringe-worthiness of, like, a Osgood.
Right.
It's sort of like they know him from Almost Stories.
Right. He's someone that they already know about.
Yeah, so you don't. Yeah. So in for them, they don't need the stories about the Ice Warriors and Weeping Angels, and which I get that why you would include Weeping Angels, because they're probably the biggest New Who monster, and right. Ice Warriors are like, okay, we're going classic that appeared in Gaeta's stories, but it just seemed like a really weird Ice Warriors. It's just no one other than Mark Gatiss gets excited about Ice Warriors. I feel I just.
That was a weird one. That was a weird one. I was kind of modeling in my head, well, what would have happened if he'd said Daleks? I mean, Daleks have been built up to such an extent in terms of a cosmic horror and a threat to kind of existence itself that they're as inconsequential as they're not a consequential thing. They're still quite a consequential thing in this universe. Whereas Ice Warriors sort of aren't consequential at all, if you've mm-hmm. heard of them, which most people haven't, unless they remember back to when they were on Mars with those soldiers,
right.
Or in that submarine.
Yeah.
and then Weeping Angels, again, I mean, they're interesting because they're one of the standout monsters from New Who, but they're massively inconsistent and don't really work if you think for more than about 10 seconds about them. Mm-hmm. But there you go, yeah.
Yeah, you want a story about Weeping Angels and the Tauran Wood Beast.
The time I met the Tauran Wood Beast!
The Murka.
But again, I mean, one could say that, again, Blink is being dissed as it was the previous week as being, the week before as an episode that actually fans like, but actually, I don't know, it's not as good as everybody thinks it is. The Doctor saying, why are you all so interested in Blink? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yeah, Tauran Wood Beast would have been great. Yeah,
it would have been funny.
It would have been funny.
And I think they were going for funny at that point, or he wasn't going for funny at that point. But
yeah.
If you're doing fan service, classic fan service, that would have gotten a big chuckle out of me.
Though I mean, sorry, Murka just popped into my head because I was thinking pathetic Doctor Who monsters from the classic series. I mean, how all this is then going to dovetail into the war between the land and the sea, which is,
there you go, the Murka.
By all accounts, like a grim, gritty reboot of unit on reptile action. I don't know. I really don't know how all this is going to be fitted together. I hope it's going to be fitted together well. Though I suspect it might be hard to do that well, but we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to see if, I guess it's going to be on Disney, so it'll be watchable by Americans.
Yeah. It must be on Disney. Yeah, I think it, yeah. How conceivable it will be to Americans, I have no idea, but we'll see. Yeah.
So having said that, I liked seeing Dr. Joe Martin back, Dr. Ruth back, or the Fugitive Doctor, which I just think is an abysmal nickname for her. But I guess that's what we're calling her, the Fugitive Doctor.
Fugitive Doctor, yeah.
I didn't like how she was brought in, I guess. She was brought in a cast of non-white actors, so she kind of blended in. And then she was the one, it was sort of like, are we trying to protect Gatwa's gayness by doing that? Or are we trying to promote the Doctor's pansexuality?
What do you mean?
Well, this is when the scene or the discussion with Abby,
right,
when Gatwa was saying, I remember you now, you're Anansi's daughter. I tried to lose the bet, and Abby wanted him to win the bet to take her away from Anansi. But then we see the Fugitive Doctor, and it's sort of like, oh, well, okay, it isn't a male and a female, it's two women.
Yeah, same sex.
And it's this, it seemed more of a distraction to me. And I thought it would have been stronger and more reflective on the Doctor, the Gatwa Doctor, that, okay, he had this adventure in the past that we don't know about,
yeah,
where he was trying to win Anansi, but now it's the Division Doctor, Joe Martin, and it just seemed wrong, at some tonally wrong. Not it just so again, like we said, waste of Joe Martin.
Having follow as I do Joe Martin on social media, she was obviously pretty pumped to be in the episode, which is great, good for her. My immediate reaction was like, okay. So they have a story which is all black actors. So then again, the past Doctor has to be black as well. I mean, isn't that just a little bit gestural?
I thought it undercut the thing that got what Doctor was saying at the beginning, where he goes back to Lagos and to Omo's barbershop because he fits in, and it's sort of like, and he's new in this black body, and it just seemed to me like, okay, yes,
had one before.
You've had one before. That's fine, but we haven't seen a black male lead Doctor, and it seemed to almost undercut that feeling of belonging in that scene, the scene early on when he's going through the Lagos market.
Yeah.
And knowing people and making friendly comments to shoppers, and then, you know, uncle, brother, you know, it just seemed, I mean, what do I know? It just seemed totally wrong, I guess.
Yeah. Then my other thought, well, you know, maybe they should have got one of the other doctors in, but then of course you can't have...
I wouldn't have had any of them.
No,
I would have just
exactly.
kept it with Gatwa. I think it was stronger with Gatwa doing that.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. No, I agree. And I don't think it was strengthened by having Jo Martin in there as much as I was overjoyed to see her. And I think of all the doctors, if you have to have a doctor in, it has to be Jo Martin, because you can't have a white doctor bidding on and winning a black child, because that's not a good look. And in which case, I think you're right. You skid away from that desire to Doctor Whoify all this by past doctors need to be involved, and just have it centered around the shooty doctor, because you're exactly right. When he's walking through those Lagos streets, that was such a strong, you know, it was interesting to me because it had that kind of vibe of when a beloved science fiction character goes back to their home world and they're walking. I'm thinking this happens on Star Wars a lot, even though it probably doesn't. I don't really watch any Star Wars properties.
But
they're walking through the market square and everyone's like high-fiving and saying hello and it's all friendly and they're back home at last. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting that this Doctor's home is not Gallifrey or Unit HQ or Nest Cottage or whatever, you know, the various kind of homes that the Doctor might have had in the past. This Doctor's home is Lagos. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a place where I guarantee I wouldn't feel at home, which is fine. I mean, there's no reason why.
It's Denholm Elliot all over again.
I'm down Denholm Elliot when I go to Lagos every time. But to have this doctor feel so at home, and he's been very explicit, the shooty doctor, talking about, like, you know, the Time Lords are gone. I don't have a home. Gallifrey's gone. We're back to that, you know, the lonely doctor figure from the early parts of, you know, from the original RTD story making in this. And it was so delightful to see him in a place where, you know, he is recognized and is not under threat.
Right.
Apart from, again, when he finds the mysterious barbershop, which is, again, was sort of slightly, at the beginning was slightly remind you of Mr. Ben's mysterious costume shop in Mr. Ben, you know, which of course it should do. So yeah, you know, yeah, you're right. It was unnecessary, and I think I think it was part of the Doctor Whoifying that was necessary for this script, which I don't think actually was necessary really in the end. Or maybe it was because it's all got to be tied into this all being a fiction. Here's Poppy from Space Babies.
Right.
You know, if Poppy from Space Babies is in this episode, then this must be some kind of fiction, because Poppy from Space Babies is a character from another story.
From another series.
From another series, from a million years in the future or whatever it was. So, you know, that's kind of proof positive that something is, that's what we're going to have here.
So I spoke earlier of the casting of Bakari's portrayal of the barber, and I felt that because Gat was a very intense doctor, and he can really tip. He's like Tom Baker in that he can make it all about him, and he can really tip the scale of balance towards him. But with the barber, with Bakari's barber, I felt the doctor, Gatwa, was evenly matched in intensity and in emotional range. I don't know if Bakari was crying at the end, but it was nice to see that it wasn't the doctor that was crying or sad for Picard. He laughed at him. It's sort of like, you're such a liar. It's sort of how, I can't remember if it's Matthew Sweet. Is he the interviewer on the DVDs?
Yeah, it's Matthew Sweet.
I think he was talking to Tom Baker, or somebody was talking to Tom Baker, and they asked, is that story true? And Tom takes a deep breath and goes, you never asked a storyteller whether that's a true story or not. And I kind of got the same kind of vibe with Bakari. Right. It's sort of like, you don't undermine the storyteller, and that's how instead of reacting in fear or like this guy is powerful, the doctor just laughs at him. And all the barber wanted to do, he wanted credit for the stories. He literally said, all I really wanted is just credit for my work. And I think that's a really powerful statement, especially when you think of writers now and creative musicians and painters and artists in general with generative AI, that stealing of intellectual and sweat and work and creativity, and to put it into some algorithm that some tech brother financed and stealing. And just, I think it has a really strong meaning today, is all I wanted is be credited and compensated for my work.
Right. Which is what this 47 minutes should have been about. That's such a strong, strong piece of story. And I think, again, as usual, we do our own rewrites of this. But I think with a little bit more time and a little bit of pulling back from season arcs, I think that could have come out far more, you know, that could have been really... Because, as you said, Bakari I'd never seen him before. He's not an actor I know at all.
Oh, he was in The Woman Who Lived. He played the Lion 9 character.
Oh, okay.
But he was, of course, in heavy makeup, dressed as an alien, so you didn't recognize him.
Okay. But he was super intense. And that, when he started to cut off his dreadlocks, that was wow.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, oh, my God, that's like a Samson. I'm self-Samsoning myself. You know, that was just... very, very powerful piece of, you know, just kind of physical performance.
Yes.
I'll have to say, at the very beginning of the, you know, in the first kind of 10, 15 minutes, I was like, maybe this is going to be a bit like Neil Gaiman's Doctor Who stories. And like the barber is like the doctor, or the Corsair. It's like he's a Time Lord.
The Rani.
The Rani. And like, you know, his barbershop is it's a TARDIS.
Yeah.
And there's his companion. It's like, this is, and then he obviously.
Yeah, I did get that vibe too, that this is a parallel to the doctor, that the doctor has his companion. Right. And that's why Abby was so disdainful for him, is like, you don't recognize me because. Who knows?
But I mean, it wasn't overt like that. Well, I then realized, oh, well, no, this is not a direct counterpoint to the Doctor, but this is in the same place as the Doctor. This is a teller of stories with a companion, with a magic ship that is powered by those stories. And obviously that's what Doctor Who is. It's a magic... The TARDIS is a magic ship that's powered by the stories of the Doctor. You know, the show... is a magical thing that is powered by the stories that it tells, which again, I suppose, then makes the kind of down-to-earthness of the story that the Doctor actually tells, which is a story about a nurse doing a nurse thing.
Right. Saving a life.
The kind of banality of saving a life in the real world. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's again, I mean, I think, like actually all of the stories, all of the episodes in this season, unlike the previous season in some ways, these are interesting stories to talk about. Whereas I think in the last season, I felt, these are just a bit dull to talk about. But I mean, I think the discussions that we're having in these podcasts, listener, I find very interesting.
Yeah.
For a change. I mean, not that they're not usually. They're always interesting, but, you know, there are more, there's things to talk about other than Doctor Who things.
There are more grist for the millstone in these
stories. Exactly. They're getting plenty of high quality high-quality King Arthur flour is emerging from our twin millstones as we grind away. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Mm. What do you think of the name check of Hemingway, of all writers to use?
Don't know. Okay. I mean, I was like, Hemingway, I guess. I don't know. I mean, my only explanation is that the writer, Elams, really likes Hemingway.
My thought was Hemingway has an African connection with the snows of Kilimanjaro.
Oh, okay.
And so yeah. Hemingway did have that famous bit with the six-word story. So maybe that was why Elams included it because it had... Yeah. It's nice and succinct, and it's also, the barber couldn't think of a six-word story to describe himself, and that was kind of the hook that the doctor used to snag him and reel him back from despair and self-annihilation.
Well, maybe this actually keys into your analysis, where the six-word story was an important plot point. Mm-hmm. So it was important that the writer of this story credited the original writer of the originator of the six-word story. Because one could certainly imagine another writer like, well, fine, yes, I know Hemingway came up with it, but it's not relevant. I mean, why mention, no one's heard of Hemingway, this is for kids, Hemingway's completely obscure nowadays, that's not going to make any sense, I'm just going to say that the doctor came up with that concept.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the story is not Hemingway's. It's always attributed to Hemingway, but I think it appeared in a newspaper story. So it's associated with Hemingway.
Oh,
so,
interesting. All right. Okay.
But yeah, I do, if you don't dig too deep, that may be it, giving credit to that original idea.
You know, rather than stealing that idea and crediting it to yourself, which is what all these storytelling gods have been doing to the poor barber over the millennia.
Yeah, because I think the story came out when Hemingway was like a child, and and he didn't claim. I don't know. I don't know the story around it, but that for sale baby shoes never worn is kind of urban legend around Hemingway.
Right. I always get that one mixed up with the comb and the whatever the other present is. I can't remember. You know, those stories.
Oh, the watch and the
That
hair
one.
Yeah,
I always get that.
Gifts of the Magi.
Gifts of the Magi. That's it. Yep. And the monkey's paw and all that. All those famous stories that you know, and you're like, well, he actually wrote that. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I think so far in the series, I'm liking far better the ones that are fantasy and about story than the ones that are gritty, such as The Well or Ruby Sunday based, like whatever we had watched last week.
Yeah, the Ruby Sunday story where she... What did she do? I can't even remember what she did last week now.
She shagged one of the McGann brothers and...
An unlucky day,
A lucky day, that was right.
Yeah, it was a story. Yeah, they were pretending to be a monster, and then there was a real monster. What's going on there?
The other thing is the barber. I don't know if you picked up on it when the barber was talking, but he went back and one line summaries of the season. Do you remember that?
I don't actually know.
Okay, so
refresh my memory.
He was explaining how did he build the World Wide Web or his story engine. I'll quote. I started small, a pub lit by candles, a Catholic church confession box, then a coal-powered theater, an electric cinema, and then we see the cinema for Lux, and then a space opera, and then we see the outline of the spaceships that they had in Robot Revolution. So that kind of further folds this back into this whole series.
Right.
So there's this connection to the series, but then the whole reference to these other gods that aren't fitting into this kind of artificially constructed pantheon that Davis is trying to use as a season arc.
Right.
It's kind of muddy.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. There's a lot of work to do to get this all wrapped up if we are building towards a terminus of some kind. And I think we can see it. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, it's unclear to our mind. I hope it is a lot clearer to the showrunner and that we can really wrap this up well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we only have two stories left in the series, right? We have the...
We got three more, right?
Well, three episodes, but two stories, right? Assuming the last one... One is a two-parter. We have the Eurovision in space, and then we have the season finale. So,
which is a two-part, right? Yeah.
There's really not a lot of time to develop one of these Doctor Who arcs unless you do something like Flux, which is one big story chopped up into six episodes.
Yeah.
I kind of go back to what you were saying earlier, that maybe the episodic version of Doctor Who isn't working as well, because there was enough in this story alone that you could have two or three episodes.
The whole episode is about telling stories.
Right.
As you said, you know, the Doctor could have sat down in that barber's chair and we could have had a whole episode of the Doctor telling us a story about the time the Weeping Angels teamed up with the Ice Warriors and he had to defeat them, you know, which could have been another 45 minutes of storytelling. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, this barbershop could have been an envelope for an entire season.
I was just about to say that. He could be relating, you know, Belinda barges in. He could say, well, here's how I met Belinda. And it's a very nice framing device, too. And I really... Again, I like the story a lot.
Yeah.
It's one of the few of the last few years that I can envision going back and watching again, because it does seem to have a richness to it that others don't. Yeah.
Going back to my idea of, you know, episodic Doctor Who not really working in the current media landscape, I think it is interesting that the spin-off that we have from this particular iteration of Doctor Who is not an episodic Torchwood, but is a single story told up of a number of episodes. I don't know how many episodes are in the War Between the Land of the Free. I think someone worked it out, because it's, you know, it's the spare episodes that we're not getting for actual Doctor Who. But, you know, it's one story. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. No, I agree. I think this is it's a classic. It's a Weeping's Angel. It's a Blink level classic. I think there's a lot that could happen within this. A lot of things that could come out of this. There's a lot of things for fans to be talking about going into the future from this episode. I think it's that strong.
But Blink was instantly recognized as a classic. I think this is more of like a Deadly Assassin, where it's going to take a while for it to sink in, rattle around in fandom for a while, and be recognized truly as a great piece of Doctor Who. I think the flashier stories like last week's Lucky Day or even The Well are going to attract more people's attention this season, because like The Well, it's a return back to creepy Doctor Who, or Ruby's back and it's like a sequel to 73 Yards, which was probably many people stand out of last series. So this one I think is going to be a slow boil. I think it's going to take a while for fandom to coalesce and elevate this one, but I could be wrong. I haven't read any haven't listened to any podcasts, haven't read any reaction online, so
we'll see.
What I wait patiently until we get this recorded before I find out what other people have said.
Oh, well done you. God goodness, I don't nearly have the patience that you have. But there you go.
Well, tell me, what have you heard?
I think in general it's well received.
Excellent.
I really try to avoid the I hate all of new Doctor Who people who are really...
performative.
All they're saying at this point is I just hate all new Doctor Who, which is, okay, great. Well, that's interesting. Why? You can't say that, because what you really mean is I don't like black people.
Or women.
Exactly. But so the people that I have bumped into online and read what they've said, the reaction has been very positive.
Oh, good. That's encouraging.
Yeah. And enthusiastic, as it should be. Because, I mean, I think if you're going to do fantasy Doctor Who, this is the right way to do it. It is reminiscent of previous, you know, well-done fantasy episodes, like... you know, The Land of Fiction, etc.
Yeah,
you know.
The director, Michaela McPherson, I think did a fantastic job.
I'm guessing
this was mostly studio-bound. I don't know if they had location in Lagos for the market.
Yeah, there was one shot of the kind of a busy Lagos street from a distance, which obviously didn't go to Lagos, so that must have been like an insert. Actually, I'll have to say this. One thing that did disappoint me about the direction, I know why she did it, but it kind of took me a little bit out of the action. I would have loved the barbershop to have been on a busy street and be one of those kind of places that I guess we've had them before in fantasy where, you know, you half see but isn't really there, and there's people milling around, but maybe it's too Harry Potter, I don't know, you know, you only see it if you're looking for it, kind of thing.
Kind of like the trap street in
Curse
of the Raven, or with
that's what I mean by Harry Potter. Yes, exactly. Because I mean, because I just enjoyed those scenes of the Doctor being relaxed and at home.
Yeah,
in those busy streets.
Those type of scenes I really like. They're equivalent to when the time team is like wandering around in the first episode of Ark in Space, where they're just exploring and getting along. I like those kind of relaxed moments with my favorite characters. Right.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Would it be so great, you know, if the Doctor and Belinda had sat down and had a, I don't know what you eat on the streets of Lagos. Street food, delicious Lagos street food, and just be like kicked back. And, you know, they'd gone there because the Doctor wanted some kind of a holiday, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, whatever. So, yeah. There you go.
One last thought. I think Murray Gold is really phoning it in. I just think he really needs to tell Davis that he's out of ideas.
Well, I mean, reading my Doctor Who magazine, he's had to come up with four pastiche Eurovision songs for next week's episode.
Oh, he's knackered.
So maybe he was like, oh, Jesus, I really can't do any more of this. The music wasn't that good. You're better at music than I am, but even I could tell that this was like, oh, this isn't really going that well.
Why put four Eurovision-like songs on one composer? Why not farm that out to your friend Murray Gold and then three others?
Yeah, we'll just...
You know, they would be more distinctive. They would be more... Why do that?
I mean, we'll just get some Eurovision songs. There's plenty of them around. Interestingly, and this is just a completely inconsequential anecdote that you're more than happy for you to cut from this podcast, or maybe when we do actually do the Eurovision episode, we conclude it then. But we were on holiday last year in Italy, lucky us, and we're staying with some friends, and we went to see a woman, like a kind of singer-songwriter woman, play the guitar in like a bar in Lucca, in Tuscany.
Yeah.
And she was American, but happened to live in Lucca. And at the end of her slightly kind of folky guitar set, she revealed that one of her day jobs is writing songs for Eurovision.
Oh, well, there you go.
Basically, there are people around Europe who, like, you go to write you a Eurovision song. So you're exactly right. Mm-hmm. They could have just farmed it out to the woman who lives in Lucca. I've got her address and telephone number. I mean, I could have given that to Russell for free.
Well, we'll have to see what next episode brings us in song quality. But
yeah, we will.
Not to rag on Gold too much, but the music, the rehashing of the music is kind of tiresome.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard job. And, I mean, obviously he's put in the hours over the years. And I'm amazed that he can come up with anything that's remotely new at this point. But then I'm not a composer, so I don't really know. Right. How it all works. But yeah, I mean, it would have been so great to get a Nigerian composer to do score a Nigerian episode.
Yep.
Plenty of Nigerians living in London, and I'm sure a good proportion of those people are musicians, so do that anyway. So whatever.
All right. Well, any other thoughts?
Or Cardiff. Cardiff. I think those are all of my thoughts.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening to episode 267 of the Metabulous 2 podcast. I have been wondering what my six-word story would be with Ben.
And I have been, as usual, stanning Joe Martin with David.
All right. Until next time. Oh, we are going to be a little bit late. We have travel.
Yes, we are.
Ben is traveling, and so we will be late. If you're expecting us to be on time, do not expect us to be on time with the Eurovision episode.
Maybe to kill time, watch actual Eurovision, which we do every year, and it's I love Eurovision so much. I have a feeling of trepidation about this next episode because I'm a huge fan of Eurovision, and I'm not entirely sure the Doctor Who's going to be able to do Eurovision justice. But we will see. Maybe.
Here's a dumb Eurovision question for you. Does
Please.
Scotland, England, and Wales and Northern Ireland, do they, or is it just UK?
It's just UK, yes, just Great Britain. Yeah.
All right. So,
I mean, regular Ireland has had, obviously they have their own one.
Of course.
The weird ones with Eurovision is they include Australia and Israel, which is
Australia.
Odd. Australia, yeah.
Okay, well.
I mean, I think mainly because Australians, you know, with their love of ABBA, which is well documented, also love Eurovision a lot. I mean, they don't usually get very far, but they are in it. At least they used to be. I mean, maybe they've cut them now, I don't know. I mean, there's been so much changes around Eurovision in the last few years, what with Russia and Ukraine and Israel and all that kind of malarkey. Who knows? Anyway, yeah.
Well, enjoy. Enjoy your Eurovision, and we'll talk in a few weeks.
Excellent. Okay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. Bye. Mm-hmm.